Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, the Italian-American podcast on culture and history. Today, my guest is Anthony Molinaro. Anthony is a very well-known pianist and composer. He studied at the University of North Texas with Pamela Mia Paul and later with Ursula Oppens at Northwestern University. He has won several awards, most notably the William C. Byrd International Piano Competition and the 1995 National Piano Fellowship from the American Pianist Association. Already being hailed as one of the hottest young pianists in the world, Anthony Molinaro's stunning performances and unique versatility have captivated audiences and critics alike since his victory at the 1997 Nuremberg International Piano Competition. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
I met you at Loyola University where you work, and we will talk about that later. And you give a piano recital. And just meeting you the one time, you were passionate about music and you were passionate about your Italian background. I can see that easily. So speaking of your Italian background, your family's background, tell us about that.
My father grew up in Rome, and my father's side of the family basically moved here, four brothers, when they were more or less around 18, 20, that kind of age.
Okay.
And my grandmother as well. And I grew up, with my grandmother watching me.
Oh, very
nice.
It was
a very interesting dynamic because she watched me all the time. She spoke very little English. I spoke no Italian. I speak Italian now, but I did not.
In those days, you
did child.
Not? No.
But we had this, very interesting bond. And, later in life when I did learn Italian, even though my grandmother had passed, it was one of those things where I felt like I did her proud that I learned the language, So
I can relate.
Yeah, yeah.
I have kind of a similar story as well. Yes. And where did you grow up in?
South suburbs of Chicago.
South suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah.
Okay. So did you go to Italy as a child?
I did. No? The family vacation every couple of years. I went there when I was very little. 2 years old, I think. And I remember, I think we went there, maybe it was fourth grade, something around there, for like 2 months.
Okay.
And I know that was an interesting trip because we went, my father came for 1 month, and then my mom stayed with me and my brother for the other month. My mom learned Italian.
Okay. That's great.
But it was really I think it was the summer of 2000 that I went for the first extended stay, rented a place in Rome, Campo di Fiori. To basically live and learn. And that's when I learned Italian.
So how old were you when you did this?
I was 28, 29.
Oh, so 28 you decided I'm going to go to Italy?
Yeah,
and
I always
stay
felt
there.
A little bit incomplete not speaking Italian.
Really? So it bothered you?
It did bother me. Huh. And, for years I still to some degree, I guess, I'll sometimes wonder why I didn't, not just my father, but, my three uncles here, why didn't they teach my cousins Italian? And, I think pretty much that was a huge sacrifice. I don't think people can appreciate what a sacrifice that is. My father and his brothers left their sister behind. My aunt is still there.
She's still there.
Okay. Which is fantastic for me. It's a beautiful thing now. I'm heading to Rome on Tuesday.
Wow.
I go almost every year, every other year.
Oh, that's great.
For an extended stay. And I'm very close to my aunt and my cousins there. But going back, I have one cousin in particular who, whenever she talks about watching my father and a couple of my uncles leave, it is a very emotional thing. It's like powerful because she felt like they were being abandoned. So anyway, I think that it was such a sacrifice in America and United States, and English was the gift. And I don't think it ever really occurred to them to teach Italian.
Yeah, and I think it was a different time.
Yeah, it makes
sense.
There
was a lot of other elements that were involved with that. Is your father alive?
He passed just this year.
October. Okay, so he was able to see you.
Oh, yeah.
With your Italian rebirth, so to speak.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
and
great.
In terms of the music side, which the two often cross, my dad really is the reason for my success. I'm the biggest fan. I don't think he ever missed a concert in Chicago. So,
did he have a music background?
No, which makes it all the more incredible to me.
So how did you get involved in music?
Well, my father started, I think it was mostly my father, but my parents, my mother also deserved a heck of a lot of credit, but were very, very supportive. But I think one of my uncles, my father's brother, started his kids, the oldest just a few months older than me, or half a year, or something like that. And I don't know the exact story, but I think it was just one of those ideas. It's one of those things where it's a good thing to do, you know. But I was 3 and a half when I started, and it was clear for as long as I can remember. I don't remember 3 and a half necessarily, but that it was homework, schoolwork, and then sports. My father was a great athlete.
Oh, really?
So that was always interesting.
Okay.
That music came before sports. He was my soccer coach. He was my tennis. He was a very serious tennis player. He wasn't necessarily my tennis coach on the team, but that's who I worked with all the time. So, but for some reason, music had its place, and it was, you know, it was not even one of those things that you bothered arguing anymore. It was just a waste of time. You know, you got to practice piano a half hour.
Why would you like that as a kid, or was it about?
You know, I would say that there's always a day or two where you want to go outside. I mean, I'm like many kids. I can go outside and shoot hoops for 8 hours. You know what I mean? But
did you know, or like, I mean, it's hard for a child, but did they tell you, hey, you're pretty good at this, so
you know,
you're going to want to keep this up? Or?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I knew I was going to be a musician, but I didn't know what that meant. And what I mean by that is that my parents were not subscribers to the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, the type of music that I would play, classical music mostly, which is how my career was launched. I was very advanced technically, but not very advanced intellectually. I didn't know a lot of the music that I would eventually end up playing. So yeah, I felt, and I was telling people, as you know, probably earlier than junior high, but I remember junior high vividly, you know, saying I'm going to be a musician. But really, what I knew was the music that I heard on the radio, which was popular music. But really, my studies were classical music.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
So was it strictly piano, or did you play?
Yeah, Well, I did play trumpet pretty seriously. There was a while that I wasn't sure which way I was
going. Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
But to this day, do you still play the trumpet?
No. You know, my junior year, I went away for a summer camp playing trumpet at the Eastman School of Music, and it was great. But when I came back, and I think I knew that piano was a couple of years, I continued to play trumpet, but piano was
the main thing. Yeah. Okay. Getting back to, because I'm very interested. You said at 28, you decided to go to Rome. You didn't really speak Italian.
No. Hardly
anything.
Yeah.
That's gutsy. It's ambitious. It's a lot of things. So, I mean, what about even work and all that? I mean, how does it 20?
Well, I'm very fortunate, because what happened was, you mentioned it in the intro, is that in 1997, I won this award. It's called the Naumburg International Piano Competition. And this is it is the oldest, actually, music competition in the United States. And it's a prestigious type thing where you win it. And when you win it, there's like 3 years worth of concerts at big places like Ravinia and stuff like that.
Wow.
So there are a lot of music competitions. And, you know, they're often a few bucks and, you know, one performance opportunity. And then there are a few of them that are like the number. The finals were at Avery Fisher Hall in New York City at Lincoln Center. So big, big deal. So what happened then was basically that I had a lot of freedom. So if I ended up – and what I
– meaning a lot of time?
A lot of time. I ended up my schedule – sort of worked out where I was playing a lot during the year, like the academic sort of year.
Okay.
And I wasn't, you know, academia. And the summers, there are plenty of concert opportunities in the summers, but I kept that free. And so I would, when I went in, again, I think it was 2000, to Rome, that was just free time. So I remember I came back, I remember specifically going to Canada to play a concert, but then I went right back to Rome. So I rented a place for like 6 months. So, you know, I had that luxury. And for years after that, I had another apartment in Rome. And if I was playing in Europe, when I was done, if I didn't have a concert that I had to get back to the U.S. for, then I just, you know, stay in Europe.
And how was the transition when you first got there, living there? Because, I mean,
it was great.
Vacationing and visiting is one thing.
No, it was great. Well, first of all, I'm very lucky, because I have my aunt there, as I mentioned, and my cousins there. So, you know, very helpful. They found my apartment and all of that. But what I realized early on was I was, you know, part of the reason I went there was because I think I felt a little bit incomplete not speaking Italian, and almost like a little embarrassed, as if anybody cared or anybody knew, right? You know, you walk around knowing that you're Italian.
Did you feel, because like if you say I'm Italian, but I don't speak Italian, people kind of look at you like, how Italian are you if you don't speak
Italian? Yeah, I don't know if people did that as much, but I
yourself.
Did that. Yeah, absolutely. And it might have had something to do also being a concert pianist. And almost inevitably, you know, at every show, somebody would come backstage and, you know, start speaking Italian or something.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I, you know, I don't think people would assume that. You know, very few Italian Americans kids.
Unfortunately,
very few.
Yes.
So I don't think people come back and like, oh, assume that I spoke Italian, but maybe because there's an artistic thing going on.
Sure.
So for me, it was something that I wanted.
So the driving force behind the idea to go and live there was to learn a language.
Yeah, that was a driving force, but you know. You could do worse than Rome. So
oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's going to be a fun time.
But, you know, a few minutes ago I said it was great. And, of course, going to Rome is great. But what was really great was that it was a reminder about the process of learning, which now as a teacher, well, I feel like I've always been a teacher, but now as, like, you know, formal professor of music at a university and I use my experience in Rome often. I tell this story, you know, that so for the first week or two, I felt a little bit holed up in my apartment because I didn't know how to ask for something or I was afraid someone was going to laugh at me. And I very quickly realized that if people don't laugh at me a few times a day, then I'm missing out on life because that's, you know, I don't buy into this stuff that you get older and you can't learn like you can with a kid. You can when you're a kid because of this brain stuff and all the other, you know. That might exist, but that pales in comparison to the fact that when you're a kid, you have nothing to do. You don't care if people laugh, but you'll dance naked in the street.
Sure.
You don't care. And how well does a five-year-old speak English or Italian? No, whatever language. Not that well.
Not that well.
Yet an adult says, I want to learn, you know, Italian. Who doesn't speak Italian? Buy some tapes. And after 3 weeks, they give up because they're not speaking, you know, like a native.
Italian.
Yeah.
Right.
And a child at 7 or 8 doesn't even speak that well, you know, so they don't have the patience. They don't have the secret in life. This is wraps it up. This is very simple.
Please
be a child and be free and go out there. And if someone laughs at you because you asked for something and you use this crazy word, you learn. You'll never forget that moment. And you learn, you know,
true.
So that true. Experience really, sort of informs everything that I do in terms of teaching and learning myself.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think that my experience with Italians in Italy, they like it when you try to speak their language. It's kind of an honor. You're trying to speak our language, okay? And they're not going to make fun of you. They know that, you know, you didn't live there your whole life. I, too, went to Italy the very first time. I was 19 years old. I knew a few words. But I went when I was 19. I went when I was 20. I went when I was 21. I studied at the Loyola Rome Center. I adored it. I would, you know, meet up with people and I made friends there and I had a girlfriend and I was like a sponge absorbing the way they talked and their way of speech and the words they use. And I loved it. And I also felt like you did, like, to myself, I felt like, well, how Italian can you be if you don't know the language? And knowing the language is how you get to know the people. Because this is the way you can talk to them and you can see what makes them tick and what makes them upset and what makes them happy and how do they do things. So it's a huge thing. And I unfortunately, it's not almost like dying, but it's not as many children know it.
Oh, very few know it. Yeah, it's sad. You know, part of it is when I started talking about my trip to Rome, I said, you know, I have family there. And well, that was great, and you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Absolutely.
There's also something cool about being dropped in with no one to help you, because it's sink or swim, and you're gonna swim, you know.
Yes.
But it just forces you to do more than you would otherwise have to. So the thing now is, you go to Rome, and you know, I lived in this Campo di Fiori. For those who know, it's, you know, this famous market. So every day I was there, you know, reading my paper and breakfast, and I watched all the tourists come in. You could. Not only just speak English, but you could speak English however you want to, and they're going to understand. It's not even proper English,
right,
you know?
Right.
Let me get a, I always love, you know, people ask for something. Let me get a, not, may I please have, you know?
Sure.
They still know what that is. You know, so you could basically, you don't have to make any concessions. You could speak the exact way you speak on the streets of Chicago, and they know our language. So, you know, it's cool.
But you're right. I mean, the best way to learn is to be dropped there. And that's it. My wife is from, she was born in Italy, she's born in Calabria, up in a small town in the mountain. And
which town is that?
It's near Cosenza.
Oh, okay, because my father was born in Falconara Albanese, which is all Calabria.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
it's near Cosenza?
Close, yes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And my daughter, my kids have been to Italy 3 times. But if you really want them to get something out of it, that's a perfect spot to leave them there with no, because no, don't speak English, because no one in this town speaks English. Right, now you're up in a mountain and no one speaks English. Guess what? You're going to learn it. And you're going to, you know, at the end of a month or 2 months or 3 months. So you're right. I mean, going to Italy is fantastic. But if you're going to go on a tour, spend 2 weeks, you're not going to improve your language skills. If you're going to go to a place and you're by yourself, or you're in a setting where no one speaks English, that's the best way. Absolutely. Tell me about Loyola University, your position, how you got there.
Yeah, well, Loyola is fantastic. And now I'm the director of music. I started teaching in 2008. Essentially, I was touring. I've never had any other job other than playing music. And I've pretty much been very fortunate. I mean, I guess I've like to think I made my fortune by working extremely hard at my craft. But up until 2008, when I started teaching in fall 2008, all I did was play concerts. I guess the few years before that, I started teaching a few students out of my home.
Oh, but you never really taught?
No, not a formal institution. And my life was traveling around playing concerts. But I was always very passionate about education. I just didn't know that if the institution was very fit for me. So when I was on the road, I would do master classes. I'd volunteer, go to schools. I'd do anything that anybody asked for because I loved it. And I remember in 2007, I decided, I want to look into teaching at a university. And so you sign up for these lists, and you find out what jobs are up. And I remember standing in my cousin's apartment in Rome because I was playing in Europe and getting this email and looking at my computer over breakfast probably and seeing that there was a job at Loyola open. And I remember thinking, I didn't even know Loyola had a program. That's what I thought because it was very small. It was non-existent, to be honest. It was very small.
The music program.
And I mean, I'm from Chicago.
Okay.
I did a graduate degree in Northwestern. I drove by Loyola a million times.
Sure.
Never heard of any concert in Loyola's campus. Never stepped foot on Loyola's campus. Never heard of any teachers there in music, but at that same moment, literally a split second after that, I thought, this could be the perfect thing because though my career was launched as a concert pianist, playing classical music, all the standard stuff, playing solo recitals and playing as soloists in symphony orchestras, I was always a composer and an improviser, and I was interested in lots of different things. And on top of that, it's my city. I played at Symphony Center. I played at Ravinia. I played at the Green. I've done all these things. I know people. I could, this idea of maybe going to Loyola and building a program rather than just going somewhere and teaching.
It was kind of exciting.
It was incredibly exciting. And to fast forward a little bit then, so when I was a finalist for the job, I remember, I'm sure I must have studied before, to learn that there was a Rome Center. And I remember, though, in my interview with the dean saying, Rome is my second city. I basically live there when I'm not living here. And, I know it. I would love to build stuff there too, And then fast forward even more where the two of us met and learning, this new Italian-American program.
Studies program,
it's,
sure.
It's like the stars aligning, man. So I think I said it at the program where I played a little bit, I feel like I'm the product of that, and so it's an honor for me to be help out, be part of it in any way that I can.
Have you visited the Rome Center?
I've taught at the Rome Center already.
You have?
My first summer that I went to, I wasn't teaching there. But again, I just go to Rome most summers anyway, And I went there and I met Susanna Cavallo, and she invited me to everything. Susanna Cavallo is a distinguished member of the Loyola faculty who was the dean, I think her title was dean of the faculty at the Rome Center.
Right.
So she was basically running all the academic stuff at the Loyola Rome Center, and just a fantastic person. And I went and met her, and she's a musician too. That's not
oh, is that right?
Oh, she's very passionate about music, and so she, Father Michael Garanzini was visiting, and other board members at the time. There were all these events. She invited me to everything, so we became friends, and I got to know the Rome Center a little bit. Then 2 years ago, I think it was, I went to teach there, and so then I'm heading back.
Now, do you teach there in the summer or during the school year?
The summer. So when I leave on Tuesday, I'll be teaching what is our summer session 2. Essentially amounts to a 4-week program. That's all of July.
Oh, I didn't even know Loyola had summer
programs. Yeah, there's
two
summer programs.
Oh,
there might even be a third, to be honest with you, but there are two main ones in Rome, Summer Session 1 and Summer Session 2.
I don't think they had that. Of course, I went to school there in 1987, so that was quite a while ago. I don't think they had any summer programs.
I think the faculty that comes over from Chicago, they go during the summer.
Okay.
You know, unless somebody has a position like Suzanne.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's.
Oh, so that works out perfect
for
you.
Oh, fantastic.
So, did you sell the apartment as well?
I don't. I probably would have kept my second apartment because it was a perfect thing in Trastevere.
Oh, you were in Trastevere?
Oh, it was great.
Wow.
And I know Trastevere really well. It's very close to my first apartment anyway, but one of my relatives lives there. So, I spent a lot of time there. And I had this great situation with the landlord, wanted it back. And so it was fantastic because it wasn't that expensive to come and go when I wanted.
But now you stay at the Rome Center.
Now
I stay
with my relatives a lot. I will stay at the Rome Center. Last time I was there, I moved between a couple different spots.
And
one of my cousins from Trastevere came over here.
Oh.
So she gave me her spot. So.
Yeah. And they've renovated the Rome Center campus, isn't that correct?
I think it's going, there's extensive renovations going on. It was mostly, when I was there last, mostly talk. About it, I think. So I'm not.
Well, I know there's been a major fundraising effort with the alum.
I know it's happening or has happened or is still happening. I just haven't seen.
Yeah, no, that's
great. I
don't
know exactly where it's at.
So Loyola's been a great mix for
I mean, it couldn't be better. And really, over the last few years, you know, I'm really fortunate because as a musician, I play concerts there. And then so I get to meet a lot of people that might be more difficult if I was just, you know, in a department where you didn't have that. Kind of public performance element.
Just
and,
curiosity.
Yeah.
Any Italian American students are studying music, or
I'm trying to think specifically if I've had the couple students I've had who were really passionate about Italian. I have had a few, but they weren't Italian. I had one Polish student who went to study in Naples after that. He even gave part of a senior recital singing Neapolitan songs. You know, it's really beautiful.
That's a compliment as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just find it unfortunate that our own people don't appreciate the beauty of the culture.
But I don't know if I would say that. You might be right. But I would say that, you know, first of all, the music program is a young program.
Okay.
But it's going to be very interesting now, especially, I think it's an interesting period, but I'll find really great interest in it. But the music program is really taking off. Every year we're making strides. We got our biggest incoming class of music majors. There's going to be this new Italian studies program. You know, I can.
Will there be a little tie-in with the music and the Italian American studies program?
For me personally,
well, for your personal,
I could see that easily happening because I'm happy to be involved in the Italian American studies program any way that I can, any way that people would like me to, any way that I can help. And so certainly down the road, I could see how the two will be a relationship there. Yeah.
That's great. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Tell me about, you have a record label?
Well, I did. We actually shut it down a couple years ago. Really, it was a labor of love. I started it, and then I brought on a friend. And what was happening, there was this great opportunity, you know, really starting once the internet took off, for musicians to self-release albums. And, you know, let's compare, say, 2005 with 1985. 1985, you had to be signed basically to a major label, or at least a label, because you couldn't make your own CD. You couldn't make your own album.
That's true.
And 2005, you could. And so for...
In 1985, I wouldn't have a show.
Yeah, and exactly.
In 2005 2016.
So what happened was that for for the kind of music that I play, let's say classical music, jazz music, the record labels were shying away. They weren't really interested. Even if you were a big name and the greatest pianist or whatever in the world, they weren't interested so much in selling 10,000 records anymore. You either sold a million or they didn't care about it.
I got you.
So you would have this, there was a wealth of talent. They're starting to put out their own. So what basically the short story is we took that and put it under one umbrella. But it was really all about the artists. Like we weren't looking to make money. It was a labor of love. And what happened was it was going great until iTunes came along. And then basically in the last 2 years, people almost stopped buying CDs altogether. So basically, this amounts to instead of making $15 every time you sell a CD, like at a concert, people stop buying those, and then they buy a $9.99 album off of iTunes, and the artist gets like six something.
Oh,
so, I mean, we were not in this to make money. We actually we gave our time and everything. We wanted to help musicians out. And I say we, I had a partner in New York City, okay. great pianist. And it was great for what it was, but it's impossible now. You can't, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, I see.
Yeah. Okay. But it was really cool. And with lots of great artists. And I have musicians all the time. I had a prospective student come in the other day. Like this week came in. He's a drummer. And he brought his drumsticks because he was going to have a lesson with our drum instructor. Okay. And his drumsticks are name of him, Keith Carlock, this phenomenal drummer. And I said he was on the label. And I gave him a DVD and a CD.
Great.
So the students were like, what? What are you talking about? Yeah, he's on your record. Yeah.
Beautiful.
So lots of great relationships and music.
So what's the future hold for your music?
That's a great question because I'm not exactly certain. You know, I did a big project a couple years ago, called Here, There, and Everywhere, which was a solo piano album of arrangements, improvisations, and even compositions on music of the Beatles. And I played a lot of concerts, and I was happy to have a little bit of a break. Then I'm very, very passionate about Loyola. So then at the same time, I'm having a little bit of a break. I become the director of the program. And right now, I feel like I'm just, you know, having that fire again to do a new project. And I'm not exactly sure what that's going to be. But there was a period of time the last year, I was happy to, you know, if someone said, can you come play for this concert? I was like, sure. You know, I'm happy to do it. But I didn't feel like the need that I had to perform publicly. And my father also passed. So that was, you know, I had stuff going on with that. And I was happy for the break though anyway. So now the last couple of weeks I'm starting to sit down again and like, you know, more regularly and play. It was hardly a day that I would miss, that I'd be away from the piano. I practice almost every day.
Wow.
2-3 hours.
Even now?
No, I'm saying the last year I took a little bit of a break. So it's very,
okay.
Sort of a strange thing, you know? So we'll see. I don't have a great answer for that, but that's kind of cool
too. But it sounds like a lot of things are on the horizon.
Yeah, most people that do what I professional, you know, musicians, they're classical musicians, jazz musicians, and I kind of do a lot of things. So a lot of times I'm bringing all together. Like Here, There, and Everywhere was sort of a marriage of all these things.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I'm not entirely sure, but I would say that I'm most interested in having my performances tie in to my teaching. So in the case of Here, There, and Everywhere, although it didn't really work out because I didn't get the rights unexpectedly, I wanted to publish the music that I play, and I get mm-hmm. requests all the time, so then I could teach it.
Oh, I
see. I still could teach it, but it loses a little bit of the magic if I can't actually put the music out there legally.
Right.
So anyway, this idea that I might record something, an album, whatever, but then I might also teach people what I'm doing, you know. So that's what I'm most.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay, and where do people hear your music? They could even.
Everything's on iTunes. All my albums are on iTunes. And my website, there's some of my videos, and my website is anthonymolino.com.
Okay, yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much for spending the time with us.
My pleasure.
You're a remarkable person, and you're a true. A fine example of a great Italian American. I love the fact that you searched out more, because that's kind of how I am dealing with Italy, with the language and with the culture. And I can see the passion, like I said, and that's great. And you're real.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, I feel great reward having learned Italian, knowing Italy. Yeah, I wish more people would do it.
Cause
it just takes a little bit of a...
Let me tell you something. I speak pretty good. And when I'm speaking, like, I don't know what it is. I feel good. I like to hear myself speak.
Yeah.
And I think, wow, that's great. You know, and it's just like, it's in my heart. So it, like I always say, it's real. Keeping it real. When you do things from the heart and you're real, you tend to do it pretty good. So
I always feel like my grandmother smiling down there when I speak it out.
Of course she would.
I would have loved to have learned the language well enough to talk with her before she passed, but I think she's probably fine.
I too had a set of grandparents. They were from Sicily and kind of grew up with them more. And my grandmother really didn't speak English. My grandfather spoke a little. And I agree with you. They passed basically right before I went to Italy for the first time. I think actually one of them passed while I was in Italy. Mm-hmm. And I never got to sit down and talk to them and say, hey, look at me.
You know what I mean?
And I agree with you, but that's great. So keep up the great work. Keep promoting our culture, our people, our music, our language, and everything. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
And as we always do, we conclude the show with the quote of the show, some inspirational words. Today's quote comes from Andrew Carnegie, who said, "The older I get, the less I listen to what people say, and the more I look at what they do." Thank you, everyone, for listening, and have a great Italian-American day. Next time you're fine.